time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt.
Delighted to be here with you again this week.
Always good to see you, Don.
It's always good to see you.
You're such a busy guy.
I do keep myself busy.
You do. And I know that the county officials are always so happy to see
you.
Yeah,
they're good to get to see me again tomorrow.
Good. We are broadcasting from the great city of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, which is just outside Tulsa, Oklahoma. Representing OK Safe, that's Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise, and our website is ok-safe.com. And we have two more, Don, which is, and the other ones are exposinghealthcarereform.org and stopsmartmetersinoklahoma.org. So you can do .com on two of those. I said it wrong. And then .org on the other one. And you've got two websites.
I do. We'll refer you to Tulsa912project.com and to boondoggleblog.com.
Useless work.
Useless work paid for with public money.
That's a lot.
It's all of it, I think.
That is a lot. We are, it's summertime in the city of Oklahoma, in the state of Oklahoma, and it's actually summertime wherever you are, too, if you're in the
northern
hemisphere, and it's hot. And we're fortunate today. That is not a sequitur at all. I'm going right from the weather to our guest.
There you go.
Our guest is, we have an in-studio guest today, Randy Bright, church architect. You know Randy.
It's been too long since we've had Randy on our show, and I'm delighted to have him back. He and I cross paths at various functions from time to time, but it's always a treat to have him on the show.
Randy W. Bright is the director, owner, has a business called R.W. Bright Architects, and he is primarily in the church architect business, building and developing churches. He's also a columnist for the Tulsa Beacon, which is a weekly newspaper in the city of Tulsa.
Recommend it and his columns both.
They're very good. And for the last couple of years, he has been writing articles on sustainable development in the changing building codes, on smart code, smart growth. And before we get into all of that, welcome, Randy.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're glad to hear you. What's your website?
It is churcharchitect.net, and I was careful not to say the www because I know you don't like that.
Everybody knows it.
That's right.
I say it, though, because sometimes it's just fun to say www.
Yeah, well, but the insiders always say dub-dub-dub. That's the way that's
we're obviously
that's
not
the way
insiders.
It's spoken.
So churcharchitect.net.
That's the website, and I've been in church architecture. I started specializing in 96. So
you've been around a while.
Well, I've been around a little longer than that. I just started specializing in churches then. I actually got my first license in 83. So
we're talking a seasoned professional.
There you go.
Randy has written extensively on issues of changing builder standards and codes, the smart code and smart growth initiatives, new urbanism, and more. Recently, Randy has published an article questioning whether the federal government is forcing low-income, quote-unquote, affordable housing into, Don, already established or more affluent neighborhoods.
Or extremely affluent neighborhoods in this example. It's outrageous. It's amazing to imagine what their vision might be.
We're going to be talking about HUD and Westchester, New York, which is a very exclusive area, part of New York. And then later on, Don and I are going to be talking about Senate Bill 804, which is a bill that was introduced in 2013. It's still alive.
That's right.
We're in the interim right now. It can be heard again.
It's just kind of in suspended animation for the time being.
It is. It's a live round, though, and it was held over for 2014.
That's right.
And it creates a tax credit for certain special builders.
Right. So that's the subject we're going to be talking about today. And if the word Agenda 21 doesn't come up in the course of our discussion, I'd be surprised, but I believe Randy might have been the first person I ever heard about Agenda 21 from. There was a conference that I attended down somewhere near Oklahoma City, maybe three years ago.
Midwest City in 2009.
There you go.
Well, welcome, Randy.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. You started to tell us a little bit about yourself, and you've been an architect for about 20 or 30 years.
Right. Yeah, when I began working with churches, of course, you become very keenly aware of issues that affect churches. And so when I began writing for the Tulsa Beacon, I began looking at articles to write and information that was out there, and I started bumping into words that I had never heard before, and the first bump was new urbanism. You know, what is that? And I began to study that. And I found that this had already permeated the city of Fort Collins, Colorado. And so I went on their website, looked at their zoning code, and could not even find where you could build a church. And I thought, this just cannot be. And so I
must have just overlooked it. Right?
I actually called and talked to a zoning official, and he said, "Oh no, you can build a church almost anywhere in Fort Collins." Speaking of zoning, you know. But then he said, "But good luck finding land." And what I discovered was that these new codes, what they do is they put an urban growth boundary around a city in order to force all of the development within certain lines, and over a period of time, all the land is gone.
Yeah.
And so there was no place left for a church.
Is infill the term they still use for that? I know we heard that a lot about 30 years ago.
Yes, and what that means is, let's take an example. Let's say maybe something like a Walmart store or a Kmart store. Well, the powers that be think that we don't need that much parking out in front of their stores. So why not carve out some corners and build apartments or that sort of thing?
Yep.
And oddly enough, if you look at some of the people who are writing books for urban planners to study urban planning, when I get these new books, I always, you know, find what they say about churches and religious buildings. And their idea of development for a church is to take an existing church and take half their parking and put apartments on it.
Yeah, and
that's infill.
And make them share it with all the other denominations and religious groups that might exist.
That's a definite possibility
That community center nonsense that you shared with us once before.
And so I discovered that these were not codes that are friendly to churches. And of course, you mix in the problems that cities are having. The fiscal problems, they're going broke, they need as much money as they can get, and they want as much property into the tax rolls as possible. Well, churches don't pay taxes.
That's right.
So we find cities that just say, we don't want churches.
If you take away parking lots and options for people to park a car, this is also unfriendly to cars, transportation. I was in retail for 16 years, and you always wanted people to drive up with a car. You wanted a big shopping cart,
right?
So that, because that's more dollars. More dollars in sales translates into more sales tax dollars,
right.
And then you don't have a municipality that's short because
that's right.
of lack of, you can only purchase what you can carry in your backpack and or on a bicycle and live nearby. And these guys, when you were describing this, I thought, these guys really love congestion.
They do, and they seem to think that the income from the property taxes are more important than the income from sales taxes. And I can tell you, that's sure not the way the numbers break down in most communities.
Mm-hmm. So, but if you have multiple apartment dwellings, you're only getting the property tax on one footprint, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Instead of multiple dwellings.
And when you speak of congestion, for example, the city of Portland, Oregon, their city officials freely admitted that they wanted congestion in their streets because that made more people walk.
That's right.
Or take a bicycle or take mass transit.
Drive them out of their cars.
They wanted that congestion to help get their agenda, you know, done.
They really work well in L.A., too, I might add.
I've never been there.
Oh.
It's just like on television.
It's worse.
Well, Randy, you started writing about smart growth and new urbanism.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you didn't mention how many states you're licensed in to practice your craft.
I'm in eight states.
In eight states. Yeah. All right. So you've run into this everywhere that you are certified to work.
Well, actually, not specific cases. What I see it generally being done in all states, pretty much, and you know, some states more so than others. Especially when you look at the East Coast, the West Coast, you'll find far more regulations on the coastlines than you do in the interior. But I mean, even cities in the interior, this is permeating the whole country. Yeah. So.
If you're interested in all of Randy's articles, you can access them on the OK Safe website, which is ok-safe.com, and it takes you right to the Tulsa Beacon link, which is really who you're writing for, and we're just able to link to that.
That's right. And if you're not a subscriber to the Tulsa Beacon, I would encourage it. Nobody's paying me to give them a commercial, but it's a very worthwhile $35 a year, in my opinion. So.
A lot of good articles.
There are. And they've been pretty good about reporting and supporting some of the grassroots activities that we've been involved in. So I think they're a useful ally.
And Warren Buffett doesn't own them.
Yet. And Randy writes for them.
All right. Let's talk about your...
There's an article. Yeah, there's an article that you did on June the 6th that really attracted our attention for a number of reasons, and it has to do with this situation in New York, just outside of New York City in Westchester County. Give us some of the background and get us started on that.
Well, actually, I found out about the case on a Sunday morning. I was watching Fox News, and they had a man on by the name of Rob Astorino, and he's a county executive. And the county had gone through a lawsuit, I think in 2009 it was settled. And the lawsuit was essentially, it said that this area, this county basically was too white and too rich.
Yeah.
And that poorer people just did not have a chance to live there. And so they sued, and the settlement required the county to build 750, quote-unquote, affordable units of housing. Well, anytime you hear the word affordable, what that really means is government subsidized.
That's right. Code word.
So it is definitely a code
word. Could the people who qualify for affordable housing be white?
I don't know about that. I would assume so. I think it was more of an economic thing than race. But that was one of the things that was brought up, I believe, in the TV interview. He basically said they're saying we're too white and we're too rich and we've got to be more diverse, you know. And diversity is another one of those catchphrases that you see, and it means about the opposite of what it should.
Sure does.
At any rate, after this lawsuit was settled, and they've actually begun building these affordable homes,
750 of them.
Right.
That's a lot, by the way, for that area.
Yes. Well, and then HUD came back to them. This is outside of the court decision. And they said, we don't think that's enough. You need to build over 10,000.
Yeah, let's move the goalpost a bit. What do you think?
And that did not come from the courts. That simply came from HUD, who wanted it done.
Wow.
And in order to force them to do it, they were withholding some kind of funding that the county was supposed to get.
Were they going to import people into Westchester County to fill 10,000 units?
I honestly don't know how that was going to work. I would assume that people would move there because they were also going to local banks and saying, you need to make loans to these
people. That's an important point to make, too.
And so we're back to the very thing that caused the big bubble to burst.
Right.
All right.
So,
I'm beginning to see this. Okay. Let me see.
It has to do with illegal immigration, I think, doesn't it?
Actually, I think it has to do with building.
And that, too.
It doesn't matter if there's 10,000 people to fill those 10,000 additional units. The idea is to get the contracts, and that's kind of tied into what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Just build.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm getting ahead.
I haven't investigated that end of it, so I don't.
We'll handle that part.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more in a few
minutes.
So
I can't really speak to that, but at any rate, what Astorino was doing, he was trying to get the word out, saying, "Look, this is what the federal government is doing to us," and they're telling us that this is a test case. If they win, if they're successful at doing this, they want to go across the whole country and do the similar thing. So, you know, that means you'll have federal officials going into other affluent areas in the country saying you must have affordable homes, you know, in your
If I'm not mistaken, 5 of the 10 richest counties in the country are in the immediate suburbs of Washington, D.C., but they're not doing this there, are they?
I don't know. I've not.
Help me figure out why they'll mess up everybody else's town but not theirs.
Yeah, that's kind of curious, isn't
outside
it?
Outside Chicago, Chicago's got one of the wealthiest counties do. Outside they of do. Chicago.
They yeah, do. Well, and see, they've already got a model for this in a similar fashion in the state of Oregon. You remember when Randall O'Toole was here and spoke to us, and he told us about the laws where they rezoned the entire state. So that 5% of it was urban and 95% was rural, and they would only allow construction in the urban areas unless if you had land in the rural areas, I think you had to have 40 acres, you had to farm it for 3 years and make a profit and prove to you that you weren't a rich doctor or a lawyer out there building a villa, yep. you know, for yourself.
Yep.
And the other thing that he said was that in certain areas that if, for example, your home burned down, you would not be able to replace it with your home. You would have to build back an apartment building.
Yeah, we're starting to see hints of that same mentality in the reconstruction and building permits associated with rebuilding after the tornadoes. And we'll probably be doing a show or two on that subject coming up. But be aware out there that all of us who have been brokenhearted over the losses, both of life and of property for the poor folks in the recent storms, and we've contributed to the reconstruction effort and the emergency needs of these folks, be aware that some of them are going to be told that they're not allowed to rebuild, even if they got the private resources to do it.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because we're talking about property rights.
That's absolutely right.
You know, yeah. And if we do not have property rights,
we don't have much else.
We don't have a whole lot else in this country.
Very true, Randy.
So you discussed abandoning the current zoning codes and adopting something else.
Right, yeah, and that would be the form-based codes. The smart code is a form-based code. That's just one example, and it comes in many versions. But essentially what these codes do is they set the tone for what is going to be built, what it looks like. It goes back, I phrased coined a phrase a while back, what the public sees, the public owns. And it goes back to that you can't build anything unless it meets a certain visual standard, a certain density level, you know, number of stories, things like that. And so it literally upends our existing zoning codes. And what that can mean to a homeowner is that they could wake up someday and find out that home next door to them has been sold, torn down, and a six-story apartment building built next to them,
right.
even though the code that they built their own home there under
right.
said that was not allowed.
Serious rule change along in the middle
yes.
of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it radically alters what the value and the uses of property are.
That is correct. And, you know, I'm not against regulations. I'm against regulations that destroy our rights, you know. And frankly, if you, let's say you buy a home, you have an expectation of what to expect and what is expected of you. In other words, I'm not going to walk into some neighborhood, buy a home, tear it down, and put up a slaughterhouse,
yeah, you
know,
there you go.
Because that would destroy the value of my neighbor's properties.
Right.
But by the same token, you're looking at these new zoning codes that give you a similar way of taking away your property values, and it's not right, and it does destroy our property rights.
If you don't mind me quoting you, I want to quote a phrase from the article near the end of that same article from June 6th in the Tulsa Beacon, where you say, "I believe that what is really going on here is that the accusation of racism is being used to coerce a community to accept the government's vision of density and social justice And then you went on a couple of sentences later to say that it, that you may, by this, drive people out of these communities altogether.
Uh-huh.
And then you said, and this is, I think, the punchline of the whole article, that is, provided there is somewhere for them to go.
Yes, and you see what happens with the urban growth boundaries. If you want to live within a city that's got an urban growth boundary, it's not just a single line that you can just step over the line and build something else.
Yeah, it's not safe on the other side.
It looks more like a donut. You know, the center of the donut is the city. The and Fort Collins called it a land management area. And at, if I recall correctly, I believe it stretched about 30 miles from the city limits outward. And so it wasn't practical, for example, for a church. You know, in the old days, if a church didn't have enough space, they could go out to the outskirts of town and build a new church.
Build a big parking lot and everybody would drive.
And they would be outside of city limits for a while. Eventually, the city would grow up around them, and they'd be back in the city limits.
Right.
No big deal. But in this case, you've got an area where they would have to, in Fort Collins' case, they would have to move at least 30 miles away to find a piece of property. And then that's a piece of property that's of no value to the church because it's too far away from from their congregants.
Yep.
And so what I'm saying here is in the old days, when the downtown areas began to develop and transportation was more accessible through cars and such, the wealthier people would move to the outskirts of town. Well, if there are no outskirts left, where do they go? They have nowhere to go.
The crime, you already touched on, the value of the property goes down, and there may be no place else for people to go. Do you have any, and it's not mentioned in your article, but is there any evidence that increase in crime if you start mixing these kinds of housing developments together?
I would say yes, and I could give you actually an example, and that was the Pruitt-Igoe project in St. Louis. And of course, the naysayers always say, "Oh, that was an exception," and in a way, it was because it was such a failed experiment that for a long time nobody else did it. You know, but what happened there? They built these high rise. First of all, they went into a quote unquote blighted area, took everybody's homes, built these high-rise apartments, and their theory was if we give them a wonderful place to live, they'll be wonderful people. But within years, the buildings were just literally just demolished.
Rather few years at that.
Yes, because all of the people that lived there were involved in crime and drugs, and they'd stripped all the metal out and and sold it. And eventually they razed them all to the ground because they were so dangerous. And I have no idea what happened to the people that lived there, but most of them moved out as quickly as they could.
Yeah.
There's two thoughts I have, and I know we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, but one is that it's not scriptural. There's admonitions in scripture about piling people in close, living on one on top of another. I can't think of where it is, but I know that I've read this, and it is this admonition, is each person is supposed to have their own space in order for there to be a successful community. Plus, because God clearly understood human nature, we're not supposed to be crammed in on a small footprint, one family right next to another family. Well, and the other thing is the lack of privacy, and it's just not natural. If you have a it's anti-family.
Yes, it is.
You need yards, you need swing sets, you need access to grocery stores, you need a
fresh air.
a
little sunshine.
I brought this coming week's article, and we can talk a little bit about that, and it's even more hair-raising than Westchester.
Well, like I told you before we went on air, I don't see how you keep your head from exploding, because these kinds of situations make me crazy.
All I can tell you is I know God's in control.
Thank you for that. That's exactly right. Thank you, Randy.
It doesn't mean that we don't fight for the right thing, but I still go to bed at night, and these things other things keep me awake, but not this.
Good for you. Good for you.
If people are interested in seeing more information on the HUD income and sales and rent limits and this whole idea, you can go to HUD.gov And you can also check on this particular story. There's information there on westchestergov.com/HUD, Housing and Urban Development.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It used to be, there was another acronym that went with HUD.
I can't think of what it was.
You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was back in the 60s or 70s, yeah. I believe.
I remember HUD because as part of Sustainable Development's plan, they had human settlements. They were describing what human settlements were. Uh-huh. And people always think, oh, that's some developing country. That's a third world country. Yeah. That's not the United States. Well, that was a global application for the description of human settlements, and that's where I saw where the definition of infrastructure included people and the view sheds and the air and more than just roads and bridges. Mm-hmm. That's the music indicating the end of the first half of America in the Balance. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host, my great co-host, Don Wyatt, and our special guest today is Randy Bright. We're going to ask you to stick around through the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back.
Listen, baby! do not let a tear fall from your eye. Oh!
Welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden with Don Wyatt.
I'm glad to be here still. I enjoyed that music. We were talking off air. That's supposedly the most covered song in history. There's 33,000 artists and groups have sung or recorded a version of that. 25,000 of them actually recorded.
They'll leave it to Don to have all the statistics.
Written in 1935 by George Gershwin for Porgy and Bess.
That was Summertime by Billy Stewart. And I think that one was from 1966.
Yeah, that's the one that actually was the most popular over the years.
I like that. How you do that trill in the at the beginning.
I enjoyed the Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald version, but they're all good. Billie Holiday, I guess, did one of the early popular ones.
That was a good one. Better song than last week was just eerie. Smart meter song was
but
just,
on purpose.
Yeah, it was just weird. Well, anyway, now we're getting back to the subject matter. Our guest today is Randy Bright, and we've been talking about HUD versus Westchester County, New York, and this is a beginning of a horrible trend of forcing affordable housing into established neighborhoods, whether they're affluent or not, but to change the demographics. I think because government really doesn't care about people, but there are a lot of dollars and tax credits incentives for building things if you are part of the sustainable agenda here. And we've seen evidence of that with a bill in our state, Senate Bill 804, which was the Affordable Housing Act for Oklahoma.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Sounds good.
All their titles sound good.
Sounds good. And by golly, they had a builder out of Missouri was going to be the primary benefactor, who also was a campaign donor for all the legislators who were supporting this, including to the two authors.
I'm shocked. Is that true?
It is sad but true. And they denied that there was any kind of connection. But I think the money, which you already talked about, they were going to withhold money, the federal dollars, unless they did this. And they went from 750 units to 10,000. That's a big jump.
10,000 units stuffed into Westchester County.
Can't you just see the headlines here is that housing starts are up?
Yes.
Now, Don, have you been to Westchester County?
Yes, I have, many times.
Is there space to put housing like that?
In everybody's front yard, yes.
Okay. Well,
how many churches
this
are there?
Is where
we just need to take the churches.
This is where estates are. This is... It's not Hyannisport, but it's that kind of thing that you've seen on TV from Hyannisport.
Right. Well, you know, what may be happening is they're trying to densify the area, too. And that's a big push with the form-based.
Absolutely.
My dad, you said he was kind of dense, you wouldn't think that was a compliment. But in this case, dense is what they're achieving. Meaning more people per square foot.
Yes, that's
square
right.
Square mile.
Or square acre or whatever.
Kilometer or whatever.
Yeah, and that's a big deal right now because they want to get as many people off of the rural areas and into the urban areas.
Yeah.
Well, did something happen? I mean, I know I don't pay attention to everything, but did the earth get smaller?
Not that I know of.
The people that are pushing this agenda have never been in an airplane, I'm convinced. All you got to do is fly over this country, and you realize that it's open. It's really not packed. We don't have to worry about running out of space anytime soon.
I read one time that if you took the entire world's population and gave them a 2-foot by 2-foot spot to stand on, that it would fill up the town of Jacksonville, Mississippi. I believe
that's about right. And in fact, if you gave them a place to live, a house, the entire Earth's population would fit in the state of Texas.
Yeah, we've got plenty of land, so this is not about land.
It's a different agenda altogether.
It's a different agenda. You know, you were asking me why didn't my head explode. You can find funny things if you look for them.
Well, share them with us, please, quick.
And when I start reading about densification, I run into people who have varying degrees of densification that they think is the right thing to do. And they keep upping the ante. And so it's, you know, one person says, I can be more dense than you. No, I can be more dense than you.
Interesting.
And then you just agree, you're dense.
Yes. Yeah, and yeah, exactly. So I ran into an article this week. And in fact, my article this coming week in the Beacon is about hyperdensity.
I want you to share more about that in a second, but tell me the funny thing first. Just being dense.
The funny thing is that the urban planners are trying to outdo themselves at density.
It is funny, so, isn't it?
You take it as you wish, you know.
That is funny.
How many people can fit into a Prius?
It used to be a Volkswagen.
Or a phone booth.
Well, we have to keep up with the times.
That's right.
That's right.
No, actually, there is now somebody who's a proponent of what they call hyperdensity.
And is this a good word?
No, it's not a good word, but it's actually not a euphemism this time. It really does describe what this person is talking about. If you can imagine being on the radio, and I have no visuals I can show you, if you imagine, say, an acre of land, and let's say you cover that entire acre with a three-story building, okay? And so that's one level of density. But you can also imagine there's no green space on that acre of land if you cover it up. So the next one would be for maybe to build a 10-story building, but you save half of that acre for green space and open space. With hyperdensity, maybe you use maybe a third or a quarter or even less of that land, and you just keep going up. So maybe you're, you know, now you're 50, 100 stories tall with your dwelling units.
Like they're doing in Dubai.
Yes. That's the thought is, and this is a guy, I'm probably going to butcher his name, Vishan Chakrabarty, the director of Columbia University Center for Real Estate, and I believe he might be an architect also.
Wow.
But he wrote an article called Building Hyperdensity and Civic Delight.
Oh, my.
So, and I'll just read you some excerpts out of my article that I quoted him. He defines hyperdensity as, quote, unquote, density sufficient to support subways. And he claims that hyperdensity contributes to the health, prosperity, and sustainability of cities, and that dense cities are the most environmentally sustainable and the most likely to encourage joyful and healthy lifestyles.
I've lived near large urban areas most of my life till I moved to Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
They're hotter.
Uh-huh.
Because there's more pavement. There's more high winds between the buildings.
Uh-huh.
There are more people. There's more traffic congestion. There's more crime. It is not happier.
No, it's not.
It's really tough to run down and buy some bananas, too. There's no stores. There's no gas stations. There's none of the things you need to survive.
There's jostling, and you can't let your kids go out unescorted. Of course, people do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great place to just go visit and then escape from.
Uh-huh.
And obviously you get a lot of ethnicity with that kind of thing, which is delightful as far as food choices go. But it's not a wonderful way to live.
Well, and think, too, about vertical transportation. Yes, you have elevators, but my office is in a five-story building. I'm on the fourth floor. I hate riding the elevator because I have to stand there waiting on it to show up, you know. And it may make three or four or five stops before it comes to the floor I'm on.
But in one of those packed buildings, you don't get to get on the first elevator that opens for you
because
it's already full. And you get to wait for another one that you're finally willing to bite the bullet and pack yourself into. They even have pushers for elevators in Japan, I think, don't they, in Tokyo?
Well, I don't know. But, you know, it's to me, that's not a pleasant way to live. You know, living vertically like that, and you have no real scenery outside of you other than other high-rise buildings, and I know let's face it, there are people among us who do enjoy living, and that's fine if they enjoy living in that. But it's not fair or even correct to say that all people should live like that. But yet, that's what the impetus is to try to to get people to live like that.
What was that, the joy of urbanism? What was that term again?
Joyful and healthy lifestyles.
Joyful.
It's
and
very
healthy.
Expensive. I don't know where he's thinking it's healthy.
It's extremely expensive to build tall buildings like that.
Well, and to maintain them and provide services for them and everything else.
Yeah, it's...
We got the smart grid, though.
Yeah, wait till the garbage guys go on strike. Then it's fun.
Now, part of...
You're so prosaic.
The other thing that's kind of funny about these guys is that one of their major complaints is that our rules and regulations are too stringent because they cannot get their brand of new urbanism, if you want to call it that, or dense living, into these cities because their zoning codes don't allow. You know, under their old codes. And so they're all pushing, you know, Andres Duaney is the big guru of the smart code. And he's calling now for what he calls pink codes. And what that means is that those are the codes that have less regulations and get you through the red tape quicker and easier. And this other fellow who's just quoted, he complains about it too. He says regulatory policy and environmental disclosure requirements have become so stringent as to impede the kind of sound, compact development that is in our collective best interest.
So the guys using this as a weapon against us are now complaining that it's not powerful enough?
Something like that.
Doesn't that follow the pattern of behavior, though, is complain that there's some sort of a hindrance or there's a problem and it's stopping the forward progress of something, and so now we have to change it, and it ends up being very costly.
Yep.
And you trade one set of rules that for another that's even more stringent, because what they've always said all along that this is all about giving people more housing choices, but in reality, what they're doing is they're taking away the choice of a single-family home.
Absolutely.
And creating fewer choices by saying you must live in multifamily environments.
Did you, the city of Moore, when we were talking, we're going to have a guest on that lives north of Moore in the Oklahoma City area, right between Moore and Oklahoma City. Oklahoma really recently experienced in May devastating tornadoes. Well, these people are trying to rebuild, and their building permits are being denied because, oh, by golly, you now live in a floodway. Now, it was destroyed by a tornado, not a flood, and you're not going to be allowed to rebuild on your own land. And they're citing the municipality is blaming FEMA, and then the individual went to FEMA, and FEMA's blaming the municipality. Well, it turned out Oklahoma City adopted the International Building Code in April of 2012, and you can thank Mayor Rick Cornett for that. Do you see the International Building Codes playing a role in this requirement or LEED certification, L-E-E-D?
Well, LEED certification, maybe. But the building code itself, not really, because... And I know the code inside out. It's very benign politically. Because it deals strictly with construction of the building and safety of the building, that sort of thing. The ones that are really political are the zoning codes, and this is where they're probably falling back on rules and regulations that have come out of FEMA.
Yes.
And they're not even necessarily adopted by Oklahoma City, but, you know, maybe Oklahoma City just has to live with them just like everybody else.
The little bit of research I did into that on the FEMA regulations for rebuilding after wind or water, which covers just about every damage.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They get you coming and going no matter what, is that they're quick to disclaim that FEMA has any way to enforce it. The enforcing of those codes or those requirements is up to the municipality.
Locally enforced.
Right. Uh-huh. But it is actually FEMA that devised and constructed and...
They drove all the language,
but they're distancing themselves. Oh, it's not us, it's the municipality, it's the enforcement arm, but it's all their language.
And oddly enough, the International Building Code even has requirements in there that allow you to build in a floodplain. You know,
just tells you how
it tells you how to do it.
Okay.
You know, so and essentially it means that anything below the floodplain is going to be concrete. You know, that's kind of a simplistic explanation of that. But as far as it saying, you know, you can't build in this area or that area, it doesn't really do that. But your zoning codes.
That's good insight because
do.
I really didn't know. And so it's the zoning codes that are the villains, not the building codes.
That and the FEMA rules. And, you know, there's a lot of, and what you really ought to do sometime is get a civil engineer on that does, you know, flood design. He could probably tell you a lot about that.
Well, imagine you were these people who can't build on their home. Now it's tornado and they need to build a underground storage.
Right.
It's not underground storage, but
underground
a safe
shelter.
Room. A safe room mm-hmm. underground, right. which is evidence that that's the safest
right.
place to be, particularly if you live in Moore, Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
Your chances of survival are much greater. But if it's in a flood zone, that could be prohibited for flood. And then
right.
it's above ground because you could be in a above water flood situation or
yeah.
wind.
Yeah.
So if FEMA creates rebuilding restrictions based on wind or water, they've actually gotten control of the land.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that would leave are fires and earthquakes, and so the West Coast wouldn't be fully controlled by that, but
that's a good
most
point.
Of the country would be.
Most of the heartland.
And why was New Orleans allowed to rebuild?
Exactly.
Well, they were rebuilding. They took a lot of people's property there and rebuilt those little cute little, I don't even want to call them cabins, but they're calling these are small houses.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, see, there's, and I have no objection to New Orleans being rebuilt where it was. I do object to it being done with our tax money.
Well, there's a reason for New Orleans to be there. I mean, that's where the junction with the Mississippi is, and it requires labor to run a port. And so there's a logical reason why New Orleans is where it is. I can understand most of that. But there's not a logical reason for them to build it below the level of seawater.
That's right.
And then,
that's right.
And well, they did that in Holland, in the Netherlands, and they've figured out how to do that reasonably well. But they don't get slammed by hurricanes the way they do in New Orleans.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. That's true. But
what you're saying, though, is that there's a way to build that accommodates what happens with weather.
Exactly, and.
And there's really not a place on the planet that you don't have some kind of risk from weather.
That's right. You know? Absolutely true.
It's just different from one place to the next.
I agree with that.
But you can build, and people all through time have lived in some very unusual places
mm-hmm.
Successfully.
Right. Yeah, they have. They have. But you know, we're really charting new territory with these so-called hyper-dense, super-tall apartment buildings where you're it's not just offices that are up there, it's people's homes.
How many people are they expecting to say, what constitutes hyperdense? What's the number?
I don't really know what that number is. He wrote an article, like if I brought it with me, I could have told you, but it's pretty high.
1,000 people an acre? Or
well, I mean, he kind of likes Tokyo and places like that.
Those two-room homes that those people are settled.
Yeah, where you're putting literally hundreds or thousands of people per acre.
Now, just think about in 2010, we went through the redistricting based on the census. This really has political consequences as well because of representation.
You
if
bet.
You have 35,000 people roughly in a House mm-hmm. district and about 62,000 in a Senate district,
right.
if everybody is densified, it's really going to change the demographics. And the boundaries of political representation.
Right.
And well, who gets elected.
Who gets elected.
Probably.
Yeah. And you know, with all the talk about building these and how sustainable it is and it's the best way to live and things like that, none of these people ever talk about the fact that if we were to have another 9/11 type attack, if they plow a plane into one of these buildings, they're going to kill thousands and thousands of people, as opposed to the evil suburbs if they were to, I mean, they wouldn't even bother to fly a plane into the suburbs because they wouldn't kill enough people to make it, you know, make the front page, you know.
So we make ourselves a far more attractive target, don't
we? Yeah, well, and I mean, think about what was hit in New York. Why did they hit? They were their timing was off. Yeah. If they had taken a later flight,
should have taken 40,000 or 50,000.
Yes, they wouldn't have been 3,000. It would have been 10 or 20 times that amount, mm-hmm. Because those buildings held, I think, 50 to 60,000 people. And so you think about that, and then think about disease. You know, why do people, you see these people walking, you know, in the news, you'll see them in Tokyo and they're walking around with a surgical mask on. Well, the reason is because when they get these the cold and flu and things that go around, people are so close to each other, like in an elevator.
Pandemics, yeah.
And you pack them together, you're going to spread disease more and more. I mean, London in the bubonic plague times was a classic example of that. They had a lot of people living in close proximity to each other. Yep. And bad sanitation on top of that, and they spread the disease.
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Where are people going to get their sense of community?
their
sense of place?
I think people are going to lose their identity in these kinds of places. They really are.
Those are the talking points of those who advocate for this. Your sense of place, sense of community.
Right. But, you know, let's say you're an upwardly mobile young person with a family, and you say, I want to buy a new or build a new home that's just for us. It suits our needs. In this scenario, what you can pick is we've got, you know, our princess model apartment here or our prince model apartment here.
Yeah, yeah.
Take your pick.
Yeah.
And it's going to be kind of a one size fits all. You know, maybe depending on the number of children that you have. And of course, in China, they limit the number of children you have.
Yep.
And I don't know that that would ever come here. But the thing is that when you build these apartments, they're suitable for a certain number of people, and that's it.
It's shocking to watch a TV show called HGTV, where they show people hunting for homes all over the planet.
Uh-huh.
And they show people hunting for homes in Paris, and they're the homes, if you can, they're condos.
Right.
Maybe a two-room condo, 500 square feet at the most. And you're talking about something in the vicinity of $1,000 a square foot as a price for them. It's just, I don't see how anybody can do that.
I think Paris was one of the examples this particular person cited also as a example of the right kind of
density. And he thinks that's good.
Yeah, I'm just a simple person, I guess. I have common sense, and to me, this makes no sense to be pushing this. So, to me, it means that there's more to it than just. And I'm not saying that this person is like he's after a political agenda. A lot of these people are not political at all. They just follow the crowd and do what their peers tell them to do, you know.
Or they think everybody thinks like them and that this is more beautiful development and it's better for society.
Or they believe that's where the market is.
Where the market is.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sitting here thinking practicality of the physical structure. You'd have one water system for the building. You'd have one HVAC system that are connected.
Yep.
So you're going to have electricity and power and gas are all fed into this. And so if you wanted to shut off the power, for instance, as you know, Ken Sellers likes to tell the story about when they were over in Korea, they would have periodic brownouts and the water would shut off, and you're not in control of that. It's the time, the state in that instance, or some outside entity can control it. And it's much easier if everybody's in a building. I see fewer choices if you're in a building like that.
That's true. Totally. Yeah, and it's a much, much different kind of building, technically, to build than a single-family home.
And if you think that's a wonderful way to be, or a wonderful environment to live in, just ask the people that went through the blackouts in New York City how enjoyable that was. You're on the 57th floor, and nothing runs. Elevators don't run. Water doesn't work. No lights anywhere.
Right.
For hours and hours. I think that was, in fact, about 3 days that they were without power.
If you stop and think about it, the windows probably do not open in those buildings.
No.
They generally do not.
You're stuck.
If they do, they're very small because they don't want people falling out.
That's right.
You know?
Yep.
Our producer is indicating 1 minute
until
we're done with this hour of American the Balance. So, Randy, you want to wrap it up?
Well, I would just say be alert if you start seeing zoning changes in your area. Don't think it's just some boring topic, which, you know, it is, but it gets real exciting when somebody's going to take something away from you.
We have a to-do item as well. Senate Bill 804 by Marlatt and Jackson is still an active bill in the state of Oklahoma, so we're going to ask you to call the Oklahoma Senate and the legislature, the House, 1-800-865-6490. That's 1-800-865-6490. And tell your senator you want him to vote no on Senate Bill 804, the Affordable Housing Tax Credit. And that's how we're going to move going forward.
We have to. We got to stop that.
We do. All right. We've had a very enjoyable hour with Randy Bright. You're going to have to come back. You've always got a lot of great information.
I'd be delighted to.
It's always a treat, Randy.
You can see his article on the TulsaBeacon.com or on OKSafe.com, OK-Safe.com. That's the end of this hour of America in the Balance. We want to thank you all for listening very much, and may God bless. Thank you.